Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to our show. And here it is, the last Monday in February, and spring will be here before you know it. I'm broadcasting tonight from the Eastgate Medical Facility, where I've been here for several months recuperating from cancer and a few other diverse diseases. And I'm happy to report that actually we've done pretty well against all odds, and we're cancer-free now. We've gotten rid of a couple of other things as well, and it's time to celebrate me feeling good. I expect to be back in our home studio by April sometime, and probably a little earlier, but right now we're here at the nursing facility. But you know, I can't think of a better way than to have a good little reunion with Mary Sutherland, who we've worked together for a long time, off and on over the years. It's been a long time, hasn't it, Mary?
You know, Jerry, I hate to tell you, but it's going on 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you sound so young.
That's a long
time. You sound so young on the air. 13 years, huh?
Yeah.
Where are you now? Still in Wisconsin?
Yeah, same place.
And you're doing pretty good, I understand.
Yeah, we're doing really good. We've been doing a lot of research. We've had conferences. We're doing, you know, different various types of documentaries. I've been writing books, you know. And Brad, he's a cancer survivor too, remember?
Yeah, now tell our audience, most of them know how to find you on the internet, but not everyone does. Give us some instructions, a URL or something here.
Well, first of all, you can find me on Facebook under Sci-Fi Cafe. That's SciFiCafe. Or you can just look under Mary Sutherland. We've got a blog site. Let's see, it's BurlingtonSciFiCafe.com. And there I post, you know, different articles. My calendar events are up there, you know, so that's a pretty good way of getting a hold of me. And then we've got the all-time favorite, BurlingtonNews.net.
Okay, that's now, when do you have time to write a book? You got this one just coming out, and I appreciate you coming on our show first to promote it.
Yep, you were the first one I gave the interview to, you know, the first radio station, and which is how I wanted it. You know, we all started together and we continue together, right?
That's right.
This is my fourth book. This book here that I just finished is called The Red-Haired Giants: Atlantis in North America. And that's book two of a five-book series, In Search of Ancient Man. So,
yeah, I want to talk to you about all of the books in the series, the ones you have planned and the ones that are, you know, are finished. And we've got to go over the name of that book a couple more times because it's an incredible read. I was just looking. We posted some photos.
Yeah.
Graphics, actually. They can find it at jerrypippin.com on the highlights window. It says click here to go to the pictures. I'll be talking to you a little bit about some of those pictures later in detail. But first of all, exactly who were the red-headed people we're talking about? I mean, they were tall, I take it, if they were giants.
How
tall were they?
Well, as time went on, they started to decrease in size. But, you know, the ones that I speak about are ranging anywhere between 8 foot and 12 foot, with sometimes stretching up to 15. And
somebody told me these weren't nice people. Is that true?
A lot of people are referred to the Nephilim, you know, the fallen angels.
Uh-huh. But it's not the same.
But then again, in that same time frame, I can show that Noah was also a giant then. And so the question is, if the giants were Nephilim and Noah was a giant, does that make him a Nephilim as well? Because he
how tall do you think Noah was, and how do you know about that?
Because it you go into the works of H.P. Blavatsky. She connects Noah with Enoch. And the First Council of Nicene connects Enoch to, Noah. So we do have that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of pretty startling, you know, to the Christian world. You know, that Noah could have possibly been a Titan. Which dates it back to the days of Atlantis. And, of course, the War of the Gods, the War of the Gods was the War of the Atlanteans. And one of the wars was the Trojan War.
And all these pictures that you sent us that we have posted, they're also on your Facebook page. You have some maps there.
Yeah.
And those maps, is that where Atlantis was or is, or what is that all about? That looks like both South and North America.
Well, the Pushkara map, the one that shows Pushkara, well, see, where a lot of people go wrong is when they're trying to follow the history of North America, they're just usually looking at history of North America. But North America has had many names prior to North America. And one of the names was Pushkara. And Pushkara, there again, you could go back into the works of H.P. Blavatsky, but this is an actual map that I have in my book showing that that this was Pushkara was the home, as far as the Vedics go, the ancient Vedics, and the Mahabharata, they describe this North America as Pushkara or Atlan, and it was home of the Nagas. And if you look at that map, you see that that serpent or that cobra, you know, stamped on North America, meaning that this was the home of the serpent people.
Well, folks, if you'd like to minimize your player, click over there on that link. You can see what we're talking about here on the maps. And I notice you have some mounds as well. But what does that signify? What's that all about?
Well, I'm trying to find these pictures, Jerry. I keep clicking on to that that spot that says click here to view Mary's pictures, and it's not coming up. So I'm going to just slip over to my Facebook site. I know I have them there.
And yeah, and I noticed that we've got some pictures of you pointing at different things. One of them looks like a head carved in stone, or is that a real person?
Right. That was that is the only bust that I know of in existence that actually depicts the serpent priest kings of Atlantis. And we found this in Kentucky it's been about 5 years ago. Brad and I had went down there because one gentleman, I think we even did a show on this a long time ago, you and me, but there was a man by the name of James Scott that had shown me some pictures of and there was this Ogham, you know, Ogham language carved into a rock wall. So knowing that Ogham was the first language, and also knowing that in the Appalachian Mountain area was supposed to be, you know, Atlantis, Brad and I went down to Kentucky, met with James Rogers, and he took us to this mountain area. And in this mountain area, it took about 4 hours to hike up through there. And we went through thickets and rattlesnakes, and the place was loaded with rattlesnakes, and we managed to get up to the top of the hill, and we found an ancient Atlantean temple up there. To the east was the Temple of the Sun, and to the west was the Temple of the Moon. And in that same area was also located this bust. And this bust is about 40 pounds, and it's carved to and depicted as a Caucasian man. And if you could see it, up close without the real bust, you could see the way they carved it. It depicts blue eyes, Caucasian race. The man has a mustache, but on top of his head, instead of that being hair, the very top of his head is kind of like a headdress with the head of a serpent on top, with the scales of the serpent kind of going down about halfway down the head, and then it changes into a feather, which would be the serpent. What would it be? Depicting the feathered serpent.
I think sometime many years ago we were doing a show, or maybe a series of shows, about some strange creatures coming out of a mountainside in Kentucky. Do you remember that?
I think that was when we did that show with James Rogers. And
yeah,
he was talking about the djinns. Because this is a very strange mountain up there. The Indians have a legend that the mountain itself is protected by the djinns, and that the mountain is hollow. And according to Indian lore, the Indians, to escape their enemies, would go into the side of this mountain and be able to go all the way through it and then exit, into another area. Right. And this is where we found a lot of the, Atlantean artifacts / Mayan artifacts.
You seem to find all these things not only around the world, but here in the good old USA.
Which is wonderful, because that has always been my theory, that Atlantis was a world empire, and that they'll find you'll hear people say, "Oh, we found Atlantis in the Bimini's." Then you'll hear another person say, "Oh, we found Atlantis over the Crete Islands." And another one saying, "Well, we found Atlantis someplace else," et cetera, et cetera. But they don't realize that it was a world empire. So the remnants of Atlantis would be all around the world, as outposts. And that's what they're finding. But if you go back to the ancient Vedic texts, especially in Mahabharata, it says exactly where Atlantis was. And they called it Atlan. And it was right here in North America.
And you're pretty certain about that, huh?
Yeah, I'm positive. My book, I use so many different references, and various texts, to pinpoint the areas. I've used geological reports showing that the oldest soil was found right here in Wisconsin. And they figured that it would have been the first soil exposed after the flood, when Europe and every other country was still underwater. And this first land ran from the lower part of Canada down through Wisconsin down into the Appalachians.
So have you Had anyone else come up with the same hypothesis or theory about Atlantis being located there? Near,
well, that's where the ancient texts go. That's, you know, in the ancient texts is where they describe the wars of the Atlantean wars, and that they went to the land of the Nagas, you know, and that's where I had showed that map with the serpent coming out or being stamped on North America, because they said that this was the land of the gods, the land of the serpent gods. And it talks about Vishnu coming here to North America, you know, and that, let's see, I'm trying to think of the name of the, there was a, let me see, Kishkar, let me, don't mind me looking at notes, right? But let's see, okay, I should mark this down. In the days, okay, here, of finding the locus in the Allegheny Mountains of North America, in the days of Peleg, or Peleg, P-E-L-E-G, this is mentioned in the Bible, the name, the country was watered by the Ohio, and its branches was the center of the Atlan Empire, with its metropolis standing somewhere on the Ohio. It was divided in several provinces and ruled by a powerful monarch of the Atlas family. And it was there was a man by the name of Rathlinsky that actually worked for the Smithsonian that collected this data and wrote a book on it. And it was sponsored by the Smithsonian. And this, and local locus, okay, hold on. It was through the work of this Rathlinsky that I was able to locate locus in North America. Local locus is a very antiquated name for the Allegheny Mountains. And beyond them was the Great White Land, the seat of the Great Atlan Empire, which was the Western Atlantic Empire. This included Kentucky and extended from Lake Ontario in the north to the Mississippi River. The Atlantic shores were called Lakota, and that, I think that's where you get your, you know, the Indian name, Lakota, is from that name, Lakota, which was uninhabitable due to the arid soils emerging from the receding waters of the Great Flood.
When we talk about the redhead giants, I want to get back to that for a minute. And first of all, I want to know exactly how tall they were and what they did. And secondly, why they're not here anymore, or are they? And we just don't know about it.
Well, the giants are still here, you're seeing it all the time through recessive genes. You'll find people, you know, around the world over 7 foot tall. I mean, we even have that in the wrestling today, you know, and football players, basketball players, you know, they're getting their height from that recessive gene, you know, of the giants. And if you think about it, Jerry, going back to the days of the dinosaur, okay, everything was giant. The plants were gigantic, the fish, you know, I mean, you know, the sea, you know, the you know, everything, the birds, you know, everything was gigantic. It wouldn't even make sense for man not to have been gigantic in proportion as well. Why would they have made, why would everything been of gigantic stature and man would have only been 5'4" or 5'5"? You know, the insects were larger than that. You know, as time went, all these animals evolved and started decreasing in size, as did man. Now, we know that man walked among the dinosaurs because we've got plenty of evidence out there to support it, including footprints, giant footprints, you know, walking next to the giant human footprints walking next to footprints of dinosaurs.
Well, okay, now, Dad, how many books, again, you told me at the first of the show, but let's repeat it for everybody. How many books are going to be in a series?
The book that I'm doing now, In Search of Ancient Man.
Mm-hmm. The one we're talking about now, is that part of a series?
Yeah. This is book two of my series, In Search of Ancient Man.
Are you going to have, five or seven?
There's going to be five.
Okay.
And book one was Lost in Time. And the reason I named it that is what I'm trying to do is, you've noticed, you know, and it's no offense to any of the other authors, but a lot of the books coming out today is based on information the other authors have received from other authors writing other books, along with information they found on the Internet. They take that in their information and they put a spin on it, their own spin, you know, and their own opinions, and they put out a book. But where with me, I'm named my book Lost in Time because what I'm doing is I'm digging in there, and I'm finding information that has been lost in time, you know, through ancient texts, ancient lore, you know. Including using the Vedic texts,
Okay, now, Mary, is this book a series of books? Is it written like a documentary form, or is it something to be continued where you want to read book number three, for instance, or book number four, number five? I mean, are they all together? Do you have the same characters or something?
No, what I'm trying to do is there's no characters per se. It's like a documentary, but it flows. I was going to try to write this as one book, but, you know, I've been working on this for, gosh, I'll bet you 13 years. And with all the information I had, there was just no way. And so I asked Brad, what should I do? And he said, Mary, the only thing you can possibly do is put it in as volume, you know, and put it as a series, you know, book one, book two, and then just take the information and let it flow. And that's what I did. So book one does not have the same information as book two. Book three won't have the same, but it'll be an ongoing, I guess, documentary as to what I have found this information that's been lost in time on the history of, right now I'm writing the history of North America, but other books will be their history of Ireland and, you know, the Middle East. One book in the series is going to be how man got caught in the middle of the War of the Gods. And it's going to be called In Search of Ancient Man, The War on Terror.
Tell me about the War of the Gods. Was that really literally Wars of the Gods, or was that something else going on?
The War of the Gods, that's going to be, well, actually, I have a little in here now about the War of the Gods, because what I did with the War of the Gods in this book is I brought it to North America, and I explained here in North America the war that was going on and how these various areas were destroyed by these, that Mahabharata explains by these celestial cities, which can't be anything other than UFOs, you know, the Vimanas, you know, that the ancient...
Yeah, you mentioned the word UFOs. Is there a connection to Atlantis and UFOs and to the red-haired giants? Is there a UFO connection?
Yes. Because the people here, living here at that time, were red-haired giants during the time of the Great War of the Gods, which was the Atlantean War. And
what kind of war was this? I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mary, but what kind of war was that, this War of the Gods, where they literally shooting each other and killing each other, or what?
Well, what it was the Atlanteans were trying to go for global power, you know, almost like today's one world government. And so they were, you know, they were stretching their empire from one country to another. And the only ones that held them back was Greece and Egypt. And when you go back to being held back by the Greeks, that was a reference to the Trojan War.
Well, you know, we talked about Babylon, earlier, and then if I understood you correctly, I thought you said that might be part of Atlantis. Did I understand you correctly?
Well,
it is.
Well, it's part of the Atlantean story. I should have said it like that, because it was the Greeks that held them back. You know, from taking over.
All these people were talking about Atlantis being off in the Gulf of Mexico, buried underwater. They're way off.
They were what?
They're way off. They're wrong.
Well, not really, because it was a world empire, so they're finding remnants of Atlantis at the Bimini, in off Crete, you know, various places. Because it's like how it is today. I mean, if something happened to our world today, and thousands of years later, archaeologists came to the United States, they would swear that China, you know, ruled this country because of all the Chinese products.
And
does
your book have prophecy in it too, or?
No.
I mean,
there is only one prophecy in the book, and the prophecy is the Atlantean prophecy that at some point in time that the world will, that the North America will become a world dominant, you know, country again, or world power. And at that time, the people are going to have to make a decision to have power for the sake of power, or power for the sake of service. And how we decided will be the destiny of the world, you know. So we have a choice. We can take the right path or we can take the left path. If we take the wrong path, then it can be dooms for us. But if we take the path for power for the sake of service for our fellow man, then we have a chance.
Well, do you have information in your book about the right and wrong path?
Yeah, I do. And we also have a little... Going back to that one picture that I have about the United or North America as Pushkara, and with the serpent coming out of it, you know, being stamped on it, it shows that North America was the land of the serpent people, right? And it also, and according to the stories, during that point of time, there were celestial cities, or, you know, flying saucer motherships, you know, vimanas, whatever you want to call them. But our country has to know about that history, because not only this country, but Mexico, because both Mexico and the United States has, the United States, their insignia is, the eagle holding the ribbon. You see that all the time, the eagle holding a ribbon in its mouth. And then you also see the Mexican flag has a bird holding a serpent in its mouth. And what that is it goes back to the ancient legend of, the legend, hold on, of Garuda. It's Kudra and Garuda. And what it says is the Mahabharata preserves the legend of Kudru and Garuda. According to the legend, Kudru, the mother of serpents, compelled Garuda, the eagle or hawk, to serve her sons by transporting them across the sea to a beautiful country in a distant land inhabited by Nagas, who were also known as Magi. And both the Great Seal of the United States and Mexico's coat of arms mysteriously depict this very legend.
Okay, now, in summary, the red-headed giants are Sho'an or they are not?
They are what?
The red-headed giants, are they real today? Are they still around or are they gone?
They are real. Yes, they're still. That is why with all you, not so much today, or at least not here in, you know, more of the Western countries, but it used to be that somebody that, you know, if you had a child with red hair in many countries, they looked upon that as a person being a witch, you know, or a bad omen, and they had them killed upon birth. I mean, recently that red hair had been some great taboo, and the reason for it all comes from the red-haired giants and the great wars. Because the red-haired giants are from the people of Cain,
let me back up and ask you this way. We've known each other a long time. I want to know where did the red-haired giants come from? I mean, who dropped them off here? Where are they? I mean, were they born animal husbandry or what?
I think that they probably came from the Anunnaki, going back to the Enlil and Enki.
With your book,
into the days of Genesis, you know, talking about the sons of God, you know, breeding with the women of Earth and having and bearing giants. All these ancient texts refer to these red-haired giants.
I didn't know they were red haired, but let's take your word for it. You've done research on it. Red haired giants. I still don't get what was their objective or what is their objective. What are they supposed to be doing?
I think, well, the red haired giants. All right, now, like I said, a lot of people think that they were the fallen angels, or they were the Nephilim, all right? There's been even yet today, there's a taboo against red hair. The Nagas, the people of North America, that was the land of Cain, or the land of Nod, they were the people of the red-haired giants. And these people, in Deuteronomy, these people, God gave the order to wipe these people off the face of the earth.
And where do the orders come from?
The elder gods?
Yeah, the orders. Where did they come from? Who gave them?
Oh, from God. You know, this was the order given to Joshua, you know. And they were supposed to destroy all these giants, and these giants had red hair. Finished the job. And so
would you call your book a religious book or a spiritual book or a story book or what?
Nope, it's just a book on history, based off lost information or hidden information that we today no longer remember or that that is not out there in the public eye. So what I did is I found this information and brought it back, you know, to the present so that people could read this information once again and form their opinions based on both sides of the coin instead of one side of the coin.
Okay, did the red-haired giants originate somewhere else?
The red-haired giants originated from, biblically, they would originated from, they were the people of Cain. And the people of Cain were red-haired giants. Now, Cain was the one that destroyed Abel. And God sent him away, did not kill him, but it sent him away to the land of Nod. And Nod is an anagram for Cain. But that, well, that goes into a whole other subject. But anyhow, where they actually went was they ended up, you know, coming back here to North America. Okay? Because North America was already here. And the people were already here. But the people of Cain came here and reestablished themselves, which I found in the records of Dan. And these people, it was later determined and ordered by God that these people needed to be wiped out. Now, apparently, these people, remember, Cain was more of a hybrid than Abel was, or Adam was. And so, because of his bloodline, it carried mystical powers. They were people of the Magi. They were referred to. They were able to shapeshift. They were able to perform all these miracles. You know, they could tell fortunes. You know, future reading. You know, readings for future events. And God considered them, or the people that followed God considered them a threat. And even yet today, well, not so much, well, in other countries, still red hair, a lot of places people are very afraid of. But earlier,
how do you think all the redheaded people in the world take to what you're saying?
Well, they should feel insulted, you know? I mean, but, of course, we've all gone through this type of superstitions before. You know, I mean, the Irish, look at how the Irish have always been persecuted. I don't think that there's too many people at some point in time that hasn't been persecuted. You know, but it doesn't take away the fact what I'm saying is being true. I'm not making it up to hurt somebody's feelings or discriminate against somebody. I'm trying to bring back their story.
Well,
if they were persecuted,
okay,
they
basically, your book is really a religious book.
No, it's not. No.
Well,
it's
all you talked about, but since I had you on here.
Well, I'm using the Vedic text, the Mahabharata. I'm using geology reports. I'm using ancient history books. I'm using Indian lore. You know, it's just that the questions you're asking, I have to reach into my biblical sources to help you to understand what I'm saying.
Have you given up on your UFO research?
No, never. We're still having a lot of UFO sightings here in Burlington. A lot of sightings.
Still yet, I know there used to be.
Yeah, there's just as many. Yeah, well, this is a vortex area, so, you know, there's those doorways, you know, opening up into, or wormholes, you know, that they're using, you know, for interdimensional travel. So there's a lot of things that are coming and going all the time around here. We just had another major UFO sighting a couple nights ago here.
What I'm getting at is you're still interested in UFOs. You think there's extraterrestrials, I think. And I do.
I do.
I'm trying to figure out if you're saying that all humanity, both earthbound and humanity from throughout the galaxies and the universe, are connected with each other, or there are different people like the red-haired giants, and then you're talking about the people of the Old Testament, and then you're talking about Atlantis and that legend.
Well, I also go into...
I'm trying to figure out which ones are connected.
Well, it's all connected from one source, of course. But the thing is, there's different humanoids that were born here on Earth. There was giants, there was little people, you know, there was the Bigfoot, you know, and Larry and me had a big discussion earlier today about even humans that we, you know, us humans, I look at as two different forms of humans. I see one human as warm-blooded, and I see another form of humans as cold-blooded. And that
is that
what
a discussion?
Well, that's what I feel that's happened to our politics today, is the cold-blooded show no empathy, no compassion. And these are the type of people that have taken over our politics around the world. And that's why we're in such a bad shape right now. You know,
so are you saying that Bigfoot people are taking over the house?
No, I'm saying that there's different lines of humanoids. I don't think that there's ever been just like one type of humanoid that was born on Earth. I think that there's many different types of beings here on Earth. Some are visible, and even some are invisible. There's, there's dimensional realms. There's, you know, we're just scratching now the surface of what the information that explains who we are and how we fit on the evolutionary scale or on the evolutionary ladder. And the red-haired people are just, the red-haired giants are one of many. But at this point in time, in this book, The Red-Haired Giants, Atlantis in North America, I'm speaking on the red-haired giants. And I'll go into other books on the fairies, the blue people, you know, multidimensional beings, elder gods, Anunnaki, you know, people that have come from different planets and reproduced here on Earth, you know, Bigfoot, you know, it's just... We're so set, we're so boxed in, and so our mindset is just put to human beings on Earth. That's it. And then they
okay. Now your book. How do they get a hold of your books?
You can get them on Amazon.com. The Red-Haired Giants by Mary Sutherland.
Okay, give that the URL again.
Amazon.com, The Red-Haired Giants.
Okay, in other words, you just enter it in the search there.
Yeah,
and it's for sale.
Go in the search, and they'll have them there.
So are you still doing other things? Last time I talked to you in Burlington, you had all kinds of enterprises.
Yeah, Frank Joseph and I are still working on trying to find that pyramid we found, you know, about 5 years ago at Rock Creek. And I told you about it. It was a black onyx pyramid with like golden hieroglyphs on it. And we saw it 1 year, and we marked the area, and we've been for the next 5 years, almost going on 5 years, and we cannot find it again. And we've had divers down there. We've had special equipment. Just you name it, we've had it. And we just can't find it. I think what happened was that the currents in under the lake, you know, they changed the lake floor, you know, over. And apparently the lake changes about 5 times a year. And I think what happened was the currents went through, uncovered that pyramid, you know, the top of that pyramid. So when we were in that area, we saw it. And then after we left in a period of time, the currents changed and covered it back up again. And we cannot locate it, but we haven't given up on it. Then another interesting thing I found was about 2-hour drive from that area going north in a place called Muscadet. We found an ancient site of these effigy mounds on this one hill, but across from that hill is a calendar, you know, a calendar mound. And you know, all the calendars we've ever seen were circular, or, you know, or maybe even like steps on a temple. But this one is elongated. It's straight. And there's 12 mounds. And I have never encountered an elongated calendar before. And I talked to Wayne May, you know, of Ancient America magazine. He's never heard of it either. And Joseph has never heard of an elongated calendar. So we've come across something very, very strange down there that we're investigating. We're going to go, a group of Wayne May and Frank Joseph and I and a few others are going to go down there and do a more thorough investigation of it this summer. But I also found a huge stone there with a, you know, that hooked cross. You know, the hooked cross is something that the Templars always left, you know, carved in the stone, you know, to let people know that they were there. And this was it was a marking for, you know, a special site, according to the Templars. So I found that rock down there as well. So, I mean, things are being rediscovered here in North America. You know, I mean, showing pyramids and, you know, effigy mounds and earth and mounds and temples. And,
so, where's a pyramid that's been discovered recently? I mean, what?
Well, I found that one right here. If you look at those pictures, there's shows three mounds. On that one picture, there's Absalon, and there is Cahokia, and the top one is a flat top step pyramid that I found or rediscovered right here in Burlington years back. And no one knew about that either, you know, because landscape had changed, you know, and there had been bed and breakfast built on top of it, and people were driving right by it, they just thought it was a big hill. And then I found the old pictures of it prior to, you know, it being, you know, being built.
Well, it's been interesting talking to you, but the clock's got us here. They can get that book by going to Amazon and give the correct title again.
The Red-Haired Giants by Mary Sutherland.
And it's a joy talking to you again, Mary, and we'll be with us again soon.
Okay, thank you for the interview, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Folks, we are about out of time here. I want to mention that on June 13th and 14th at Edinburgh, Texas, they'll be having the Border Zone UFO Conference, and we'll be broadcasting that live from gavel to gavel all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And that'll be on June the 13th and 14th. I think it's Saturday and Sunday. In fact, and it could be Friday and Saturday, but I'm not sure. Check your calendar and be sure and listen to it here on Inception Radio. I'll be there too. And JerryPepin.com will be along for the ride. Enjoyed it. We're going to close out the show with, we haven't done many UFO things tonight. So I would like to talk about UFOs here for the last little segment. Our pre-record features three people from Australia talking about their encounter with a UFO. Until next week, thanks for listening.